from unwelcomed interloper to valued part of the aerospace community. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. It's Friday, October 20th, 2006. This weekend marks the second XPRIZE Cup in the desert near Las Cruces, New Mexico. Jim Campbell sat down with event host Greg Marinac to review the status and future of the event, starting with Armadillo Aerospace's dress rehearsal with its lunar landers.
Well, we've had some really horrendous weather yesterday, but the good news is it's gorgeous here in New Mexico today. We can see the Oregon Mountains to the east of us. We just had a spectacular hover flight by Armadillo Aerospace with their vehicle Pixel, and looks like it survived the flight as far as we can tell. Kicked up a lot of dust, and just was a beautiful thing to see. You could see just row after row of shock diamonds in the exhaust stream. It was beautiful, and I suspect that you were out there with your big, long lens getting some hot shots of that. And I'll tell you, the amazing thing to me was that today I heard Mike Griffin at the summit, executive summit of the XPRIZE Cup that's going on in consort with this event. And what a long way we've come, really, in the last 9 years. I remember when Peter and I were watching as people at NASA were getting into very hot water 9 or so years ago for having a meeting that had the words space tourism in the title. And now we've got the head of NASA talking about how these entrepreneurial space efforts will be a material part of future human space exploration, hopefully even providing all the transport back and forth to the space station in the near future.
Seems like we made the transition from interloper to member of the community.
That's right. And of course, we still have to earn our stripes with this thing. It remains to be seen whether or not, you know, these real businesses will succeed. But when you look and see the strong, positive response from people now that they know that they've got a chance to go in space, I think that the market predictions that we've seen to date will prove to be actually kind of weak compared to the reality of space travel. And, you know, last year we were praying that maybe 5,000 people would show up. And as you saw, we had somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 people, depending on who you talk to. And it was very gratifying. So if this weather holds, I think we'll have a good crowd. It's fun to be driving around Las Cruces and hearing the radio stations giving out tickets, and everybody's all excited. Whoa, I could win tickets to the XPRIZE Cup. In fact, I talked to a pilot flying in El Paso for American Airlines, and he's planning to come up and bring his friends up to this thing. So the excitement really is building, and it's going to be quite a weekend, no matter what happens. You know, this is test flying. So it's a show, but it's really people getting to see actual test flights, and anything could happen. So just the notion of that, it's very much akin to the earliest days of aviation when people would come out from miles around to see an airplane just fly around, you know, a fairgrounds. That's the era that we're in.
Well, one of the things that the whole XPRIZE was based on was a little bit of repeating of history. I believe you're the one who put the bug in Peter's ear about the Orteig Prize and started the entire private space movement onto a whole new track. Now, frankly, how do you feel about your place in that bit of history?
Well, it's kind of fun. I've had some people the other day refer to me as the architect of the personal spaceflight revolution, and I just kind of sat down and laughed for a minute. I thought that was pretty funny. But, you know, the reality is that folks that have been in the aviation business for a while and have looked back at the history understand how hard it was in the early days, that we didn't just go from the Wright brothers flying to, you know, 747s overnight. It took a lot of years. And for the first 7 or 8 years of aviation, there were just a couple of planes in the whole world and a handful of pilots. And there were a couple of little explosions that happened. Around 1912, you go from a few hundred pilots to about 15,000 pilots, a lot of that fueled by prizes in Europe before World War I. And then you have the big boom in the war. And then the number of pilots declines for a little bit. Things get really slow until Charles Lindbergh comes along. And suddenly there's a boom that never had a bust. It was like the knee in the curve. Something like in the year after Lindbergh's flight, the number of pilots in America tripled. the number of airplanes licensed in America quadrupled. So if you're statistically naive, you believe that one quarter of those planes were UAVs. And and the amazing number is that within about a year and a half of Lindbergh's flight, by 1908, the number of people buying tickets, commercial tickets to ride on airplanes, went up 30 times. So that's an incredible knee in the curve. The number of airports in America, by the way, doubled within 3 years of Lindbergh's flight. So we are all, you know, the fact that I could get here from St. Louis in a couple of hours is the direct approximate result of Charles Lindbergh's 1927 flight, because it flipped everybody's bit flip switch about aviation, and it built the foundation for everything we enjoy today. So we hope to see a repeat of that. That's what XPRIZE was designed to do. And it certainly has had a massive impact on the collective psyche of the aerospace community. People now believe they have a chance to go. Companies now believe that there's a market that they can fulfill. And NASA is now willing to experiment with $500 million, which is what they're spending on these private entrepreneurial experiments, and they are experiments. And if they succeed, as I think they will, it means the pathway to space is open for all of us.
Let's talk about the big challenge this week. Let's talk about what's happening with a competition now that's putting millions of dollars of prize money on the line for people to demonstrate that private industry has the ability to compete with, quote-unquote, real-life space.
The Northrop Grumman Lunar Lander Challenge is really an amazing thing. First of all, the prize purse is coming from NASA, and that's a glorious thing. As you know, Jim, Peter Diamandis and Bob Weiss and I fought for years with lots of help to try to come up with the $10 million Ansari X Prize purse, and it was hard work. We had a lot more hair at the beginning of that process than at the end of that process. So the fact that NASA is sponsoring these centennial challenges is a huge thing. And NASA should get a lot of credit for this. A lot of people have guessed that NASA's interest in prizes came about only after the success of the XPRIZE. But in fact, NASA came to us about a year before the X-1 and X-2 flights and asked us to help them evaluate whether or not NASA could and should do prizes, and if so, what are some things that would be useful to do? So you have to give NASA a lot of credit for being innovative at a time when big space prizes were yet to be proven. And happily, that all worked out very nicely, and this is the first of the big NASA Centennial Challenges. And watch for new ones. Watch for some new ones, very exciting ones that we can't talk about right now. But I think there'll be a huge amount of excitement in coming months as NASA unveils some of these new challenges.
We'll hear more about the XPRIZE Cup in just a moment. First, this AeroCast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the aluminum V220 and V300T engines.
How smart is the engine in your aircraft? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years that you almost never have to raise the hood. Why can't an airplane engine be just as smart and just as reliable? Now it can. Check out the new V220 and V300T from Aircraft Engine Services and their state-of-the-art engine management system. Both the V220 and the V300T feature a fully redundant and certified engine management system that controls all engine operation parameters. This EMS includes a true FADEC that manages propeller pitch and other elements of engine operation not usually controlled by the EMS in piston aircraft engines. The EMS automatically provides an optimum fuel mix by constantly measuring the manifold pressure, ambient pressure, engine speed, and throttle positioning, and calculating the appropriate fuel injection timing for each cycle and cylinder. The AES V220 and V300T, as simple as a car's engine, but oh, so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at theaircraftengine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come.
Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 400 is a fire-breathing turbocharged four-seater that carries 1,100 pounds and cruises 235 knots with a next-generation Avidyne or Garmin electronic cockpit to show you the way. As high as flight level 250, way above most weather, and a max range of 1,300 nautical miles, the Columbia 400 is the kind of plane you deserve, whether you're a businessman on the go or a Sunday flyer in a hurry to his next great adventure. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or the turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144. Check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Hey, how's this for innovation? An aircraft that comes with a pilot? A Cirrus Access pilot can be your personal pilot and your flight instructor, and that's just for starters. Ask about Cirrus Access, just one of 8 new ownership programs that make Cirrus aircraft not only a joy to fly, but a joy to buy. See us online at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to our Aero News special feature. Our guest, XPRIZE Cup host Greg Maranak, has been telling ANN's Jim Campbell about the history and goals of the competition. But what's this year's immediate goal?
The challenge that's before us right now is a very interesting and practical one. It's the problem of flying vehicles and landing them vertically. And that's really different from everything that we do here on the Earth, with the exception of the Delta Clipper program that was a NASA and Air Force program. It's almost never been done. It's not particularly useful, to do rocket landings on the Earth because we've got this nifty atmosphere that allows wings and parachutes and such, so we tend to not do it. But if you're landing on airless bodies like the moon or asteroids, it's a really good thing, a good skill to master. The other interesting thing is that NASA is trying to build a larger community of people with the skill set to do these kind of landings, which means very practically that NASA is looking at private participation in the next phase of exploration of the moon, the important phase, because this time we stay, this time we live off the land, this time we use the moon to do two interesting things. One, save the Earth, and two, explore the rest of space. So it's pretty momentous that NASA is willing to partner up with private industry in the way that they're showing now. And whether or not Armadillo, who's our one contestant this year, wins, it's going to be fun.
Well, we've been very excited to watch as people build enthusiasm. We had a story about it yesterday and a lot of emails this morning about are they going to fly, what's going to happen. There's a tremendous amount of excitement. There were hundreds of emails about yesterday's story about this. So it certainly attracted a lot of attention and excited the imaginations of people who are following this from afar.
Well, it looks cool. I mean, when you see one of these ships take off, you know, I mean, you and I both know the magic of helicopter flight. It's just uncanny to see a vehicle sit there in a gravity field of the Earth, motionless, and whether you do it with rotors or rockets, it's very, very cool. And it's especially cool with rockets because, this rocket has an exhaust velocity of probably something like a mile or a mile and a half a second. So it's kicking up a lot of dust, even though we had probably an inch or two of rain yesterday here in Las Cruces. We were surprised that it had a big red cloud. So it looked a little bit like landing on Mars.
I had a spectacular picture of the dust cloud as they were flying alongside and translating sideways. It's just a tremendous amount of kick up there. And, of course, the one thing you got to remember is with rockets, there is no auto-rotation.
Yeah, absolutely right. So no second chances with this thing. These guys have to do it right. And Armadillo is interesting in that right from the get-go, they concentrated on the coding, the programming for the rockets. So they were using very small little rockets, which was making some of the old-timers laugh, saying, oh, look at those little toys. But those little toys have the same kind of control system as the kind of rocket that could give you and I and three or four of our friends a ride. So they did the hard work first, the getting the control system right. And now they can scale their rockets up to whatever size they need. And that's part of the deal with this challenge. The different levels of challenge have different hover time requirements. So the basic challenge, going from one improved pad to another improved pad, requires a 90-second hover. And 90 seconds is a long time for a rocket to be balanced on its jet like that. But the more difficult challenge involves landing on a simulated lunar surface with a variety of different crater sizes, the lesser crater and the greater crater, and others. And that also requires a 180-second total hover time. So a lot more total impulse in the vehicle system.
Probably well in excess of an order of magnitude and difficulty above the first challenge.
Lots more difficult, and remember, they have to not only go from one place to another, but they have to come back.
That's always the tough part.
Absolutely right.
Greg, there's so much happening above and beyond the big events here. We've got rocket belts. We've got rocket trucks. We've got a rocket bike. And on top of that, there's these phenomenal exhibits. There's tremendous opportunities for education. There's a very strong emphasis on education and the kids. Can you talk about that just a little bit before you go?
One of the key elements of the XPRIZE Cup and Personal Spaceflight Exhibition is a huge presence in education. We'll have thousands of students out here. In fact, some of my colleagues from the St. Louis Science Center, where I'm the director of the McDonald Planetarium, are out here to teach people some basic facts about the moon. For example, you probably have, Jim, a pretty good model of the Earth-Moon system in your house if you have a basketball and a tennis ball, because that's within about 1% of the right scale of the size of the Earth and the moon. Yeah, but if I said to you, Jim, how far apart would you expect those two things to be? What would you say based on your life experience? What would you guess?
I would hazard to guess because I know this is a trick question.
Well, almost everybody guesses about 3, 4, 5 feet.
Oh, dear God.
But the reality is, and a good way to do this, take a string, wrap it around your basketball one time, and unwrap it. That distance is the distance of the geostationary satellites that everybody's little dishes are pointing to. And that's 1/10 of the way to the moon. So it works out at the basketball-tennis ball scale that our Earth-Moon system, the neighborhood we all live in, it's 27 feet apart at that distance.
Wow.
So that's a lot of fun because it gives you right away a memorable for the rest of your life idea of the scale of the place we all live. And because the moon is in just a little gravity dimple compared to the Earth's deep gravity well, it's the stepping stone to the rest of the solar system and ultimately the universe. So we're going to use material from the moon to do things like bring it downhill into the Earth's gravity well to high orbit around the Earth to build solar power satellites, to make clean energy for the Earth, to power the first interstellar probes that will bring back pictures from the nearest star systems within the lifetimes of the people that build the first solar power satellites. Pretty exciting stuff. And it's really neat that the theme of this year's XPRIZE Cup is Moon 2.0. So stand by for adventure, Jim.
Well, we can't wait. We've been waiting for this all year. We've been very excited to be a part of it and cover it. We're particularly excited, of course, but next year, because next year I get to put down the mic and the camera and go fly a rocket, which is kind of an interesting thing to be thinking about now, and also thinking about 2 years ago and watching Brian and Mike fly and all the things that we were talking about on the ground. Now Anusha has flown in space. I'm going to get to pilot a rocket, and you changed history.
Ha! Well, and Aero News Network was right there to see it all happen.
By your invitation, for which we thank you. Greg,
thank you.
If I could, a quick plug for the St. Louis Science Center. Where can people find out information on the web, and how can they find out about what you're doing there?
They can go to slsc.org, and I invite everybody listening to come to the McDonald Planetarium. Jim, I tell all the girls and all the guys, too, that lots of guys will promise them the moon and the stars, but at the McDonald Planetarium, we can deliver them.
Such a deal. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.